Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to Ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for joining us. We're going to go best 2 falls out of three with our good friend Bill Brand, who's the president of Development Specialists Incorporated. Their financial consulting and management firm works with companies all over the country and around the world as well. They work with companies who are in industries who are having a tough time, especially helping them make sure that they make the most out of what they've got and to get their businesses turned around. He's our good friend and our long-time member of our Brain Trust. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Well, good morning, Jim. Happy to be here.
It's good to have you back. Now, one of the things that's going on out there that's really critical to our national economy, because they're one of the largest manufacturing sectors in our economy, and that's the tech industry. Now, for a long time, they've been projecting that second half 2003, things were going to start turning up. And you're working in that industry. What's it looking like?
I think that reports of an imminent turnaround are a bit premature. That isn't to say it's not going to happen, but I suspect with everything else going on, forecasting something for the balance of this year may be just about 6 months to a year early, if in fact it's going to occur. I think I see some incipient signs of the beginnings of all of it, but a key element is that money, venture capital, and financing is still tough in the industry because of the hangover from telecommunications and the bubble, and that's still a problem.
But now you're talking about new ventures primarily when you address that. You're talking about new money. What about the established companies? A lot of them are sitting on a lot of cash too.
A lot of them are sitting on a lot of cash. A lot of them are doing reasonably well, but the demand is still not there. And that's one of the reasons they're sitting on a lot of cash. There's not a lot of reasons right now to buy inventory, to buy machinery for production. It's just still a slow time. But remember, when you talk about startups too, Jim, the nature of the tech industry is everything that's new is old in about 6 months. Mm-hmm. There is a hyper cycle of evolution and if you will, success in this structure. And what I am not seeing right now, which worries me a bit, is the investment that probably needs to happen in the innovation side. That is not to say that we're lagging behind anybody, because I think it's a worldwide problem. But I think that so many people were burned when the last bubble collapsed that right now it is hard to find money on almost a pure speculation basis to devote to the kind of research you need to these successive generation of chips and other things.
Unfortunately, in the government and in the marketplace, when the pendulum swings too far in one direction, there has to be an equal and opposite swing in the other direction. And that's where we are right now. We've swung from the monopoly money side of the pendulum swing over to the austere side of the pendulum swing now, haven't we?
We have. Part of that is there's two parts to it. The first is the fact that the bubble burst, and obviously a lot of people lost a lot of money and still have somewhat of a bad taste in their mouth.
But it was monopoly money.
Yes, it was. I remarked to my wife, we joke about it, back in 1996 or 1997, it might have been 1998, when the Dow was approaching 7,000 or 8,000, I told her, it's time to get out. And she said, get out when it gets to 9. Well, the good news is we could get out now because it's back at 9. So, but it was never there. There was this mild portion of euphoria. It's not unlike the college fraternity party where the girls looked a whole lot better, if I can speak in sexist terms, at about 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
But there was a reason for that. The second reason is what I call the corporate malfeasance issues, and that is, in addition to just the rundown of the bubble, things got a little zany towards the end, and a lot of folks were less than careful about the way they accounted for cash, about the way they invested cash,
mm-hmm.
about whether they dealt first and primarily for their shareholders rather than themselves. And I think that that's all still clearing out, and it's going to take a while. And that element, if you will, of abuse on top of the element of the losses
mm-hmm.
removes just that necessary layer of trust that you need to attract the money back quickly.
One of the things you mentioned, you used the word euphoria a minute ago when you were talking about the high times of the late 90s. But don't forget what the real definition of euphoria is. Euphoria is a false sense of well-being.
All true.
Yeah, and so that's what was happening. We had this sense of well-being, but it was really false. It was a canard. It was something that wasn't there. It was just a vapor, and we shouldn't have been following it, but we were, and hopefully, you know, we've learned some lessons. If there's anything, any blessing in all that, we learned some lessons that maybe will last us for a while, and hopefully what I'd like to think is that the recovery that I'm convinced that we're on right now, and I'll get your thoughts on that when we come back into these messages, but the recovery that I'm convinced that we're on will be better and longer and stronger having been through that pendulum swing. All we got to do is get the pendulum to swing out of the austerity spectrum and back into a little bit more of turning some money loose. 20 till. We'll be right back with our good friend Bill Brandt, the president of Development Specialists Incorporated. We're back. 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Check it out when you get a chance, and don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. This week's newsletter, the article in this week's letter is Why Direct Expensing is Good for Small Business. The new direct expensing provisions in the tax bill is good for small business. And we're going to talk about that in a minute because I'm going to see if Bill agrees with me or not. Bill Brandt's our guest. But right now, Bill, I want to get back into my prediction that I see, based on what I've seen from a number of the reports I've read and from talking to some of my Brain Trust members, that 2003 is going to kind of mutter along and not do anything all that exciting, but 2004 should wind up being a pretty good year in terms, at least compared to the last four or five. What do you think?
Jim, I think I hate to toot my own horn, but I've been saying on your program now for about a year and a half that don't look for anything before about the first quarter, maybe the start of the second quarter of 2004, and we would muddle along till then. And I stand by that. But I must tell you, I know you and I sometimes are at the other end of the, or opposite ends of the political spectrum. I am concerned about the rage for tax cuts in Washington. There are other things to do with the money, the infrastructure expenses and the rest of it, just to begin with. And while I don't mind a tax cut generally, my concern is that if you look at the growth in the 90s, it was fueled by the credit markets and mm-hmm. frankly, Americans now, very customary and common use of the credit markets, far beyond what it was in the 50s or 60s or 70s. And now there's another player in the credit market. Shortly, it'll be the U.S. government trying to fund large deficits. We are taking in less money than we're paying out, and the U.S. government's borrowing in the commercial markets are going to do strange things to the interest rates.
But Bill, the difference where you and I think we differ in shades of gray, not in color perhaps, but the thing is that if we leave the money in Washington, you and I both know that the money won't get spent on what it's supposed to get spent on. It'll be spent on what the politicians have done since 9/11, and that's on whatever the heck they want to spend it on. We don't have a revenue collection problem. We've got a spending problem up there, Bill.
Well, except that we've got a structural issue this time. On a general basis, does the government spend too much? I think on a general basis, I would agree that every government spends too much. The problem is that right now, what's going on in Washington is a philosophic shift, deciding that if you're going to raise revenue and spend it, the way to make it more accountable, and I don't debate that issue philosophically, it sounds reasonable, is to do it at the local level. And what Washington is really doing is forcing the various states and municipalities to think long and hard about how they're going to raise revenue to cover the shortfalls they've got. I'm in California this morning as we speak, where there's a $38 million budget deficit. The way they're going to raise revenue, first of all, I mean, nobody can raise revenue fast enough to get $38 million, so they're going to go to the credit markets. They're going to sell bonds. And what this means is the constant use of the credit markets by government in borrowings in various forms is going to raise a lot of people's senses of risk and eventually raise the interest rates. Now, there's a couple of interesting things that happen. For many of us, we don't need a new car because over the last 3 or 4 years, we've been basically told they'll give us one and we get 5 years to pay it off with no interest. And so we've been doing that. We've refinanced our homes. I mean, there's a lot of people right now who, frankly, have offered great terms for a new loan, frankly, wouldn't need it. And the interest rates would have to drop precipitously before anybody else would be teased out doing it for home loans or the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that even if the government borrows in the public sector for a while, it's not going to have the pressure it would have had on a lot of Americans back in the 90s when we all had home equity loans at in some cases, double-digit rates and the rest of it. But what it does tell me from my perspective, Jim, too long an answer, but I have to finish it, and that is that there's a lot of excess capacity in the industry right now, in all industries, and that's a sign of the 90s when they were producing flat out.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, our manufacturing usage is probably in the low 70s on a application basis. We can afford to carry the unused productivity assets, basically, because it's costing us almost next to nothing,
mm-hmm.
1 and 2% over, you know, at prime at best. When the interest rates start to go up, a lot of companies are going to have a hard time carrying those excess assets, as they have to pay basically what amounts to be a full price for them in a standard economy.
But, Bill, do you see interest rates going up appreciably in the next 18 to 24 months?
I think it's possible. I know I sound odd when I say that, but I think a lot of people don't have a full sense of the level of public borrowings that are about to occur.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jim, you're absolutely right. The borrowings lag basically the economy, and the economy, if you will, is ahead of the borrowings because it doesn't realize what's occurring. It may well be that we all wake up after the next presidential election and have a hangover-type recession in early 2005 or into late 2005 when the interest rates start going up. But in any case, and you know, systematically, the amount of money that's going to have to be borrowed is going to drive up rates because simply it's going to mean that more people and more entities are competing for those credit dollars.
Well, let me tell you, I'm not nearly as smart or as educated about this issue as you are, but I will tell you, I look at this thing really simply, and maybe this just helps me to rationalize it, but my simple approach is this. I believe with all my heart that if small business owners like me get to keep our money, more of our money, that we'll put it back into our businesses and we'll produce things, we'll grow jobs, which will then create tax revenue, and the government will wind up having all they want. But I believe if we don't do that, if we starve the capital out of small businesses and we give it to politicians who will give it away to people who aren't producing, I think that's the wrong way to look at it. I mean, I think that's the wrong way we should go. We should definitely let small business owners primarily have as much working capital as they can. And that's the reason I like this new tax bill. And that's my real simple approach. Small business owners with more money is a good thing. Politicians with more money is a bad thing.
I'll argue with you after the break.
Tim Till, stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 7 till. Bill Brandt is our guest. Bill is the president of Development Specialists Incorporated. And Bill, why don't you give us your website, please?
It's DSI, that is DavidSamI.biz, B-I-Z.
.biz, and they can find a number of the pieces that you've written about the economy, about different business issues, and they can find all that at your website, can't they?
They can. I think there's even now a link back and forth to you. So,
yeah.
I mean, we sound here like it's so early in the morning with the Eagles intro. We sound like we should be in a bar having a beer, which is, I think, about how half our conversation has in terms of debating terms.
But, Bill, I said as we took the break there that I'm gonna cut it right down real short and sweet. Small businesses with more working capital is a good thing. Politicians, Republican or Democrat, mugwump, I don't care which side they're on, with more money, more of our tax dollars is a bad thing. And that's my position. Now, what's yours?
Moderation. Dean Martin once said we all should enjoy things in moderation, and he had a case of something called moderation in his dressing room, I believe.
It was a 100-year-old moderation.
100-year-old. The first tax cut I could probably live with, there is a certain level of revenue that the government does have to maintain, and they do things good for people. And I'm just not so sure the second go-around that this is going to prove, if we haven't outweighed it with the deficit problem. We were talking before the break, and then just during the break, about what this means for the small business owner. The one thing that scares me about the current element is there may be a recovery coming, and we've talked about it, and I think there is a form of it due. But it looks like it might be a jobless recovery. not jobless at the top end or at the low end, but rather, strangely, right in the middle, right in the white collar, you know, roll up your sleeves, middle management level, where there is unprecedented unemployment. And you and I have different viewpoints about it as well. Where do these people go? I think many of them become the very small business owners that your audience is, which I think is a great thing. I think
Guess what, Bill?
Yeah?
You're talking to one of them.
I understand.
It happened to me in 1989.
But here is my problem with it. It's going to happen quickly. It's going to happen in a floodgate-type mechanism. A lot of people, because there aren't jobs for them now, will roll up their sleeves and will get in small business, which means we have a wonderful level of an entrepreneurial activity about to start. On the other hand, for all of those people who are working hard in their own small businesses right now, they're about probably to see a wave in the next 2 years of unprecedented competition. Nothing wrong with competition. That's the American way. But on the heels of a couple of years of tough times when people thought they might just get a bit of slack and a chance to consolidate, it's going to be tough because the competition level is going to rise.
Well, what you're saying right now, I haven't said it that way, but how I've said it is that we currently don't have any pricing power, largely because of competition, and I frankly don't see any abatement to the inability to raise prices. And what you're saying is an extension on that.
Well, even worse, I think that the pricing power issue is just as you say, but I think you're going to have many people coming into the market who have never been a small business person before, and who are going to have to get their feet wet learning what pricing is all about, which means you're going to have people underpricing each other, which is the nature of excess competition to start with.
Well, you're right, and I've seen this before, and this is where people start their own businesses, and they don't know what something's worth. They honestly don't know how, and this is one of the things that I talk about as often as I can, and one of the things we're trying to do on this show, Bill, is to let people know that you cannot start a business and be successful if your plan is to undercut everybody in price.
No, it doesn't. There's an old phrase we used to use in my industry, which is, of course, if you're losing money, the way to get around that is make it up with volume. And one understands, having done that a few times, that just makes the losses come in faster. But
that's right. Somebody said they were losing so much money that you know, what's the solution? He said, we just need to buy a bigger truck.
Well, you know, and all I can tell you is I think that a lot of these folks who are going to find that the employment market is closed off to them will have decided, I think, Jim, in many ways, like you did, that they've had 20 or 30 years with a solid business experience. Mm-hmm. They know all the fundamentals. What they need is a little bit of capital. And in truth, you know, everybody asks me why business fails all the time, because I'm in the business restructuring mode. And is it bad management? Should everybody have a Harvard MBA? And, you know, none of that's really true. The truth is, this is America, Jim, as you so often point out every morning. Everybody wants to go in business for themselves and be their own boss. Sooner or later, a whole host of people, the majority, maybe try. And the truth is, Jim, everybody does it on a shoestring. And the biggest problem I see with keeping a small business going, as I think many of your listeners would agree, is undercapitalization. Mm-hmm. It's tough when you're living from customer to customer, because you've never acquired the capital base. You're a big corporation.
You're coming back around to my argument now with the direct expensing and lowering the taxes. Get this working capital back in there.
Well, and that's
Bill,
what,
I'm
you know,
sorry.
No,
I have to be rude.
But no, Jim, it's in your character. I love you. but the fact of the matter,
we got to go. Hey, Bill, we got to continue this next time. It's always fun to have you on the show. Thanks, Bill Brand.
You, Jimmy.
We'll see you next time. Bill Brand, ladies and gentlemen, got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, each and every one. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.